From KBIA News in Columbia, this is Intersection, Conversations in Our Community. I'm Sarah Shariari. This week, we're talking about homelessness in Columbia with guest Randy Cole, who is the Housing Program Supervisor with the City of Columbia, and Katie Burnham Wilkins, who is the Homeless Program Coordinator at the Truman Memorial Veterans Hospital here in Columbia. Homelessness has been on the rise in Columbia in recent years, so we're talking about what the city and other organizations are doing to get people housed. This will be a two-part series, and the second show will air May 23rd. Here's Randy Cole, Housing Program Supervisor with the City of Columbia. Could you just give me an idea of the panorama of homelessness in Columbia? What are the numbers like? How does it compare to other similarly sized cities?
Sure, yeah. If you look back, each year the city does a point-in-time count where we go out and locate homeless individuals that are sheltered or unsheltered. And now we go as far as looking at if they're doubled up. And looking back, back in 2008, that count had a total of 131 folks. And in 2015, we were up to 354. We did have a couple of years where we were a little higher before then, but the trend has been significantly upward.
Are there factors that play into that trend of upwardness?
We've grown as a city, So certainly that involves additional stresses on a community. We've seen rising housing costs, prices. I would say homelessness is its own individual animal beyond just affordable housing. A lot of the people dealing with homelessness maybe have some kind of mental health issue, a substance abuse issue, maybe some kind of unforeseen life-altering event, like a loss of a job and then several other cascading events. So there's a lot of different reasons that persons are homeless. Certainly the cost of housing is an impact on that.
And what kind of increase in the cost of housing or in the availability of affordable housing have we seen over that sort of 2011-2015 time period?
Well, if you look back at what a home cost back in 2000, a median price was about $119,000. Right now, we're around $170,000. So certainly the cost has went up. And if you look at rental rates of how many households are renters, but then also what we call housing cost burden, where they're expending more than 30% of their annual or their monthly income on housing costs, rent, utilities, and any other associated fees. Right now, we're about at 54% of renters are what we call housing cost burden. That number has been slightly stable, but increasing also slightly over the last 5 years.
When you do those studies, do they include students or are they people outside of the student
world? They do include students, So certainly that does impact that number. So to kind of figure out where we're at with that, I looked at a few different SEC communities in a study and to see how well we fared. And as far as ownership goes, we're much more affordable. But as far as rental, we were kind of in the mid to higher range. So certainly when we were looking at other mid-sized college towns, we aren't necessarily comparing exact apples to apples. It might be different breeds of apples. It's closer. We're at least looking at mid-sized college towns. But we did fare a lot better in our ownership costs. But our rental costs, we were on the upper end. Not the highest, but the upper end.
That's interesting. So it's sort of more homeownership in Columbia is still somewhat affordable, but the rental costs are definitely on the higher end, the comparable towns that you looked at.
Yeah, that's a fair statement. But also with ownership, looking at who has access to ownership, and we know African Americans are certainly struggling more to get into owner-occupied situations. Also, are there areas of our community where we see high concentrations of rentals? Because, the high turnover and high concentration of rental can be more destabilizing on a neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So although we may fare a little better on our affordability of ownership, we still have issues that we need to tackle as far as home ownership goes, as far as making sure there's ownership in all of our neighborhoods and that we aren't concentrating poverty or concentrating rentals, and that we're also providing ownership opportunities to all backgrounds. For a lot of families, it's a way of getting into the middle class and being able to build equity.
And what services are there available to people who are dealing with homelessness in Columbia today?
Sure. There's a lot of different services. We have Phoenix programs that provide services to persons with substance abuse, Lutheran Family Services. There's Turning Point. They're doing what we're calling the day center right now. And then there's also Columbia Interfaith Resource Coalition. They've now changed the name to CATCH. They do the room at the inn. Mm-hmm. There's Burrell Behavioral Health. There's several different providers in town. Also, VAC, Voluntary Action Center, does a lot with referral and also helping people with rapid rehousing that, you know, they can get a rent voucher for a certain amount of time. There's a lot of different agencies serving different parcels of the spectrum of persons, suffering from homelessness or at risk of suffering from homelessness. So we have a great coalition of people and organizations that are trying to address homelessness. We do have a couple gaps.
And what are some of those gaps that we're talking about?
You know, one gap that we're trying to fill, or we have been for some time, since before I began employment with the city, was to really expand our efforts to have a day center facility mm-hmm. where homeless persons can come in during the day, get out of the out of the weather, but also get hooked up with other services that they may need. Maybe they need some assistance with job placement, mental health service, substance abuse, whatever that service may be, and then also get them on their way back on their feet. There has been some day center services provided to the city historically, and there is right now through Turning Point. Mm-hmm. But as you see in the news, there's been some efforts to expand it. One in particular was over on the North 8th lot that we purchased back in 2014, but those plans fell through. So, yeah, we're still regrouping. There is an RFP out right now. I know we have three interested organizations that are going to submit a proposal. So hopefully we get a good proposal and can work to fill that gap more.
And the North 8th Street lot was going to be the site of this new day center. What happened with those plans?
Yeah, sure. So we had a lot of input on the front end before we purchased that lot. We started looking back in 2013, purchased it in 2014. And if you look back at the council meetings at that time, the purchase was approved before a public hearing. It was read three times. And the only comments we had at that time from neighborhood leaders, we had two specifically, if you look back at the minutes on that meeting, were in support of these efforts. They mm-hmm. thought, you know, this would be a great way to serve a need that's in that community as well as serve people in a location that's close to where there are homeless people. Mm-hmm. So at that time, we moved forward with purchasing the property.
I'm going to jump in here and do a very general and brief overview of the North 8th Street lot plan. When the lot purchase was approved by City Council in 2014, the project seemed to enjoy community support. But then concern grew among some residents that the North Central neighborhood was being overwhelmingly burdened with services for homeless people, among other issues. Several shelters and assistance programs are already located in that neighborhood. Now we'll continue with our conversation with Randy Cole, Housing Program Supervisor with the City of Columbia, and our show exploring the issue of homelessness here in Columbia. And what's going to happen with the lot then? Are there any plans for it?
Yeah, you know, everybody asks that question. So right now my plan is to go back to the neighborhood, and this is how we approach all of our projects. We try to approach the neighborhood before we do anything and say, what would you like us to do? So my assumption is they'll likely say we would like some additional affordable housing that's nice, that blends with the neighborhood and blends with, you know, their own plans for what the neighborhood should look like. But of course, they could say, you know, they want to leave it empty and have just a community garden site or maybe some other idea that we haven't even thought of. So my plan would be to go back to the North Central Neighborhood Association and ask them, how would you like us to reuse this lot?
From what I've been reading and talking with people about, it seems like one of the success stories may be with veterans. And I think our national conversation has talked a lot about homelessness and veterans and the challenges that they face. Can you talk a little about
Sure.
veterans in Columbia?
Yeah, that's a great subject. And one everyone is excited to get behind. Certainly, you know, we need to help our veterans. The project over at the Veterans Campus, the Patriot Place mm-hmm. Housing Authority's side, and then the Welcome Home side of the Veterans Campus. The city's put a significant amount of resources to that project. All of our funds are on the Welcome Home side. We have about $500,000 in city general revenue and then about $248,000 in community development block grant funds all flowing through my office that are going to that site. So that's going to be a tremendous project. It's going to be awesome. And you can see, I think you saw in the news, they're already moving people into the Patriot Place
yes.
side. That's a great partnership. Phil Steinhaus has really made all that happen, along with the folks over at the VA. So it's great. Columbia is going to be able to expand its efforts on how it serves veterans, because I think a lot of people in town and I think across the country think if you've served your country in that fashion that you shouldn't be out on the street. And I think that's something very easy for everyone to get behind.
What do you see as sort of happening in the year going forward? Do you have hope for a day center that's really going to be able to open in the medium short term?
I do have hope, and I do have, my own biases of what I think should happen there. But we do have a process that's being, going through right now. We have 3 organizations that submitted letters of intent. I now know that 2 of those organizations are going to partner together.
Mm-hmm.
VAC and Catch are going to partner together on an application. Turning Point is also going to submit an application. And both of these different applications have their own strengths. My hope would be that some energy coalesces around a specific application and we get something done. I think the opportunity is there to get something done.
Is there sort of an energy around addressing homelessness in Columbia right now?
Yeah, I think so. People have seen the rising growth in homelessness. And I think even I've heard it coined as a failure over at North 8th Street, which it is. We wanted to build a homeless center and there's one not there. I think just going through that whole process of laying a plan out there and seeing if something can happen, it didn't happen, but it has raised the conversation further of, hey, this didn't work out. What can we do to regroup and make this happen? Because it's still a huge need. So it could still be an opportunity to continue the discussion and actually get something done.
Yeah. And what is the city's total budget that's sort of directed toward homelessness? And do you think that will hold steady in the coming years?
Steve Hollis would probably be better to talk about mm-hmm. that on his, because his funds are not his. They're not his. They're the city's funds,
right.
But the ones that he oversees. He oversees about $900,000 a year. And those are portioned out to different ways to combat poverty as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
Homelessness is a piece of that. And all of Division of Human Services funds is more focused on services,
mm-hmm.
whereas the funds that I oversee are more focused on bricks and mortar infrastructure,
right.
Those types of things. So for CDBG funding, each year we have about $200,000 to $250,000 that's available for the facility needs itself. So
mm-hmm.
that could go towards constructing a new facility, purchasing a site. It could be a lease, a 2-year lease, or we can pay for up to 2 years, anything of that sort. So that's where we're at on our funds. We still have about $40,000 left in general revenue funds that were set aside for the Homeless Day Center facility. So hopefully we get those out and to an effective application that gets something done.
That was Randy Cole, Housing Program Supervisor with the City of Columbia. And this is Intersection on KBIA. Today, we're discussing the growing issue of homelessness here in Columbia. Our next guest is Katie Burnham Wilkins, who is the Homeless Program Coordinator at Truman Memorial Veterans Hospital. Katie talked with us about new housing for veterans and about renewed energy surrounding addressing homelessness. It seems to be like a lot of good things happening in the world of services for homeless
Yes.
veterans in Columbia now. Can you tell me about some of those?
I think in general, the VA as a national organization has had a big focus and push on ending homelessness among veterans. So with the Obama administration, we saw the 5-year plan to end homelessness
mm-hmm.
among veterans, and we're kind of rolling into the end of that. And so we're all kind of curious what that's going to look like going forward, because we've made great strides, but we certainly have not solved the problem. So it's been a really beautiful time to work in this industry and to be funded in a way that allows you to actually create change
mm-hmm.
And develop programs that are meaningful and really help people. One project locally that's been really exciting to be a part of is the new veteran campus. So you have a campus with kind of 2 sides. You have on one side a permanent housing program. It's a partnership between the Columbia Housing Authority and the VA. It's called Patriot Place. It's 25 HUD-VASH, which stands for Housing and Urban Development Veterans Affairs Supported Housing, project based vouchers. So they're kind of studio apartments and are fully furnished and they're beautiful. And so veterans there, I think the unique thing about the VASH voucher is that that comes with supportive intensive case management. So we know that when we house people, that's not when the work ends. There's certainly either that's when the work begins or
mm-hmm.
a continuation of the work, really helping people get stable in their own housing. And then on the other side is going to be Welcome Home's new shelter. And so they're going to hopefully provide 32 shelter beds to veterans, female, male, families. and also a supported services center. So they have a grant called Supported Services for Veteran Families, where they provide funding for homeless prevention and rapid rehousing. And so they'll have all of those programs kind of housed under the same building. And then in the middle is kind of a common space, hopefully some really beautiful green spaces, gardens. I think the community is really excited about getting behind this project and doing a lot of innovative things for the veterans that'll be living there.
In addition to Patriot Place and the sort of excitement about that, we've been hearing about this sort of energy around homelessness in general in Columbia and the task force. So if you could talk about that, that would be great.
I'd be happy to. So the Functional Zero Task Force is kind of a new project in Columbia. We have been meeting since the end of June 2015, kind of in the planning stages. We actually had our registry week for our by name list in January in conjunction with the Point in Time Count and Project Homeless Connect. But what it really is trying to create a better coordination among community providers about how we're going to tackle reducing and ending homelessness. So the idea was kind of born out of a presentation that I saw while I was in Washington, D.C. I went to D.C. about this time last year for a conference called the National Homeless Veterans Conference. And I saw a woman named Linda Kaufman speak. She's with an agency called Community Solutions, and they have been big movers and shakers in the world of reducing and ending homelessness. Mm-hmm. And so she talked about a project called Zero 2016 Project. And that was a project that selected 75 cities throughout the United States to work on strategies in their community to end veteran homelessness by 2016 and chronic homelessness by 2017. So pretty ambitious goals.
Yeah.
So we knew locally that Kansas City had a Zero 2016 project. So when I was watching Linda speak, my little wheel started turning and I kind of thought, okay, that is some really awesome strategy around this issue. And it's exciting to see, you know, I've been doing this for 8 years, and I would say, you know, some of the strategies that they're working on 5 years ago, people weren't talking about. So there's definitely been some movement on, like, how do you really do this? What works? What doesn't work? And so it's exciting to have kind of a national project that's got some great guidelines and strategy and be able to sort of see how has that worked across the country, what are best practices, and then how do you make it work here in our community. So when I came back, I talked it over with my supervisor, Sarah Fraze, who's really supportive and always awesome about letting us try different and innovative things around homelessness. And she was supportive of it, and so we kind of pitched it out to the community, and they said, all right, let's see how it goes. Let's try it. So the focus for the task force is really creating the ability for us to use a common assessment tool. So a best practice across the country is to use a tool called the VI-SPDAT, and that stands for the Vulnerability Index Service Prioritization Decision Assistance Tool. And basically what it does is it is an intake that triages kind of who is the most need. So the survey tool scores each answer. And then you can kind of see it's from 0 to 17, 17 being the highest need, 0 being the lowest need. So it kind of helps the community know which individuals have the most need. So you use this common assessment tool and you do an intake with people that you're working with, whether that's through outreach, at Turning Point at the drop-in center, at agencies when you're doing intake with clients. And then you use those assessments to create a by-name list. So that's kind of the gold standard of really knowing who the homeless population is.
Because you sit down with every single person and go over the same assessment with them.
Exactly. So people are assessed in the same way, and then their score kind of tells you how needy they are. So the idea is you use the by-name list to help you make decisions about who you're going to house. So it kind of means that agencies are no longer cherry-picking who they're going to work with or trying to predict who's going to do well in housing and house those people first. You're really looking at who's the most vulnerable in our community and working with them first.
Mm-hmm.
So we meet every second and fourth Monday and kind of work through the list. I had shared that our registry week, so registry week is really where you're trying to get as many assessments done as you can. So we did ours in conjunction with the Point in Time Count and with Project Homeless Connect. So there were, I think, a little over 100 people at that event. So we did an intake on the majority of those people. At the time, Room at the Inn, the cold weather shelter was open, and we were also going there and completing the survey assessment tool with those individuals during street outreach at each agency, really trying to get as many completed as we could. And then from there, kind of having our first initial by name list. So it's kind of in its infancy in terms of piloting how this works in our community, and we're still ironing out some of the details. But essentially, we meet every other week and sit down and kind of work through the list. We're going to, for the first time next Monday, sit down and work through the entire list, which is now, I just ran the numbers today, and we have completed a total of 241 assessments.
Wow.
So that's a lot. And they kind of break down by score. So if an individual scores an 8 or higher on that assessment, we know that they are in need of being assessed, further assessed for permanent housing. And so there are 108 individuals on that list, which is staggering. If an individual scores between a 4 and a 7, we would like to see them assessed for rapid rehousing, which means that they, in theory, should be able to resolve their homelessness on their own with a little bit of financial assistance. Mm-hmm. So that might be, you know, help getting their utilities on, help with that first month's rent, help paying deposit. And there are 109 individuals that are in that category. And then your last category is a score of 0 to 3. And those are people that, in theory, should require no further housing intervention. And we have 24 individuals that have scored between a 0 and 3. So I think there's a lot for us to learn, but we're excited about having a coordinated effort between all the homeless providers sitting at the same table, really knowing the population, who's on the list, who's not on the list, you know, who we need to be reaching out to, and kind of developing our own strategies for how we're going to tackle this problem. You know, I see it as a real positive, because I think if you don't know the problem, how do you solve the problem?
Right. How can you deal with something right. that you can't even comprehend?
And I think when you talk to us homeless providers across the years, like, you know, one thing that some of us are better at than others is the data mm-hmm. and really knowing, having a grasp on the population. And I think there's the point in time data, which we know is flawed for a variety of reasons. And so hopefully, in a way, this gives us kind of a more accurate picture of what's really happening in our community. And, you know, I think each agency does a really good job of kind of knowing their specific population, but as a whole, as a community, do we really have a grasp on this population and how we're going to solve this problem? And so I think that's the goal of the task force, is to work on those issues and work to create solutions. And hopefully, you know, 5 years from now, we're not seeing people in our city parks. We're not seeing people wandering around downtown without a place to stay that night, because we've done a bang-up job figuring it out.
And how many agencies are involved in the task force?
So there are several. So I can list them for you. There's Borough Behavioral Health. There's the City of Columbia's Division of Human Services. There's the Columbia Housing Authority, New Horizons, Phoenix Health Programs, Salvation Army, True North, Turning Point, United Way, the VA, Voluntary Action Center, and Welcome Home. So quite a few at the table.
Yes.
Yeah.
Is everybody like you sort of doing this as an extra thing on their own time?
Yes. So I would call this a collateral duty for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that we can see that although there's a little bit of, you know, heartburn with this process, in the end, having everyone at the table being able to speak the same language and understand the problem in the same way will make our jobs easier.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes, you know, some of the pressure off of feeling like you're alone in trying to solve that problem. You know, one thing that we've been working on with the University of Missouri's Truman School of Public Affairs graduate students is they're creating a housing inventory for us. And so that's been something that's been really interesting to me, to sit around the table and kind of compare resources and talk about openings and programs. And I've been doing this for 8 years, and I feel like I have a pretty darn good grasp on what's available in the community. And there have been several things that have been new to me and have surprised me. And that's wonderful to know that there are additional resources, but a little scary to know that, you know, some of our, even our seasoned people, like, don't have a grasp on exactly what's available to clients. And so I think that that's a real positive aspect of this collaboration, is kind of enhancing our knowledge of community resources and then doing a better job about utilizing those scarce resources for the people that need them the most.
That was Katie Burnham Wilkins, who is the homeless program coordinator with Truman Memorial Veterans Hospital in Columbia. Katie helps lead a new collaboration to address homelessness. Thank you for spending your time with us here at Intersection, Conversations in Our Community. I want to thank our producers, George Schramm and Christopher Beyer, and especially graduating senior Katie Eisterhold, who has been our senior producer all this year. You will be very missed. And of course, thank you to our guests, Randy Cole of the City of Columbia and Katie Burnham Wilkins. This is the first in a two-part series exploring homelessness and resources in Columbia. The second show will air May 23rd. Our music is Montana Skies. And join us this Thursday, May 12th, for a special screening of short documentaries from the project My Life, My Town. That's KBIA's collaborative reporting project with the Columbia Missourian, which documents the lives of rural teenagers as they consider their paths ahead. We'll screen the new documentaries and host a panel discussion with some of the subjects and producers afterwards. Then excerpts from that conversation and the documentaries themselves will air on Intersection next Monday and Wednesday. The free screening will be at 6 o'clock Thursday in the Fred Smith Forum at the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Parking is available in the nearby Hitt Street Garage. I'm Sarah Shariari for Intersection, here on KBIA 91.3 FM.